Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense. It's Thursday, and it's September. It's September 1st. Skies are clear over Lake Wissota. There's a little layer of mist hanging over the cornfield. The Brewers won. Serena Williams won. She beat the number two seed at the U.S. Open, who I think is 26 and she's 40. So it is a good morning for us oldsters. There's still a little something left in the tank. So our Crank It Up in the Kitchen song this morning was the live version of Billy Joel's Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. The coffee is ready, so we are good to go. On the docket this morning, we will be the first to report on new polling done on how Wisconsin voters feel about the climate initiatives in President Biden's Inflation Reduction Plan. There's a new study out about the state of Wisconsin employment, and it will not make people happy who are still out there saying, nobody wants to work. We'll look further into Labor Day, how the economy is working for the working man and working woman as the president gets set to visit Wisconsin on Labor Day. We will take a look at last night's surprise election outcome in Alaska and whether it helps the cause of those who want to reform the way we cast votes here. Either way, Sarah Palin did not have a good night thanks to her own fellow Republicans. And political analyst Joe Zepecki will add some context to this week's news, and there has been a lot of it, including a big batch of ugly that's accompanying new Republican attacks on Mandela Barnes. And then Tim Michaels claiming he's being persecuted for donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to groups fighting against diversity and women's health rights. He says he's being attacked for his Christian faith. And all I can think of is that movie line from Inigo Montoya about using that word. And I don't think you know what it means. Brewers beat the Pirates 6-1. Luke Mathers is here to help me commiserate on an August. Good riddance to August. I appreciate you got the Brewers hat on. Do you know what their August record turned out to be in the end?
Above 500?
12-15.
12-15.
Three below 500.
Three below 500? All right.
You know, 12-15. And so that's why I think we started the month three games up in the division. We're now 5.5 back, and we're still two back in the wild card hunt. So
I think that there is still enough time. I think September baseball, these last couple games, I wanted the sweeps for these last two series, but they did what they needed to do to win them. They went 4-2. I get it. That's not necessarily the best, but it could have been better, but it was still solid. It was still solid. I think Garrett Mitchell is going to be really exciting. And I think if they can find the stride and keep this going, I think they can lock up that wild card spot.
Now, weren't you the one telling me about Garrett Mitchell to you know, temper my expectations?
I'm not saying he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm just saying.
I didn't either. Nice start.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a good start. And I think if he continues going with the way that he's going, I'm not saying throw him on the stadium, retire his number and everything. I'm saying hopefully he can contribute. And
I'm putting my marker down. We're going to retire his number before this is all said and done. I'm telling you. I was trying to pull up the Brewers just to see what the September schedule looks like. But I want to say I came across a news alert. In the meantime, apparently, if this news report is true, Twitter is finally adding an edit button. Where's Lizzo or somebody to sing "It's About Damn Time"? Anyway.
Why? No, it's not good.
No. What? What? Okay. Said the editor / journalist. What do you mean? An edit button is always good.
Okay. And so if you put out a tweet and it is something that I agree with, and then I retweet it, does it show all of my followers that I retweeted the original version? Or does it show that if you edit it and all of a sudden I don't agree with it, how does that work?
It would be the edit button. Yeah. So that's the risk you take. You better only retweet or repost things that you trust, not just some, you know.
Yeah, but it's going to be like all those deep fake things where it's like you want somebody to make it look like they retweeted something that they didn't. You could just go and edit that.
You know what we need here? We need to go get a church choir and we play whenever this comes up to just sing loudly. First world problems. I mean, this is of all the things, but we're going to fight over the edit button on Twitter. So we got four in Arizona for the Brewers starting tonight at 8:40, by the way, then three in Colorado. Then back home for a true doubleheader on Thursday against San Francisco, a day game and a night game. Then three at home against Cincinnati. Then off to St. Louis for just two. Then out to play the Yankees and Mets come to town. And then four against Cincinnati, two against St. Louis, two against Miami. I'm sorry, four against Miami and three against Arizona. So not a lot of division games there because we're done with the Pirates for the year. We're done with the Cubs for the year. Mm-hmm. So really, it's the Cardinals that we're chasing. So I guess between two in St. Louis, two at home against the Cardinals in September. That's the whole season right there, folks. Not that I've ever said that before, but this one is truly the season this time around. I think I'm going to go next weekend. That would be, how many games have you been to this year?
I have gone to only one.
Okay. Well, I've got to get off the schneid here. So yeah, I think we'll do that next weekend, but that might mean we have to have another live show where we get together and you hope I bring you a bag of zucchini and I let you down again. So,
well, I can understand, I guess, now, because if you don't like it, you probably don't grow it. So you don't have all the excess. You're just complaining about other people's excess.
Now I'm intrigued because, again, most of the time it's like bad cauliflower, and that's saying something. So apparently I need to give it another chance. So I'm not saying no, which, by the way, for me is a big deal for Mr. Picky Eater here. We will take a break and come back with some new numbers on what Wisconsin voters think of new climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act after this. You're up north. Luke Mathers spinning the tunes here and bringing up some Earth, Wind, and Fire to start the month. So welcome back to Up North News on this September 1st, which means we are that much closer to November and the elections. And depending on your point of view, either the end of a long, hard slog or potentially the start of some new, better things. One of those things could have to deal with how we handle a changing climate. And at Up North News, we were among the first to publish results of a new poll of Wisconsin voters, commissioned by Evergreen Action and done by Data for Progress, a survey of 682 voters asking, what do you think of the climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act? And we are happy to have as our guest right now, you have Jared Leopold of Evergreen Action, co-founder, communications advisor, and a progressive communication strategist, and Daniel Deseroth. Daniel, did I say that right?
Yes.
lead climate strategist at Data for Progress. Nice to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Great to be here.
Okay, well, so I took a look at these poll results that we're going to be talking about here. And there's this axiom in politics that says, you know, if a poll is done internally, unlike, say, like the Marquette poll or something, if a campaign, a group, or a candidate does it, the ones that tend to be released are the ones that tend to have good news. And this one does have good news. So what was your feeling going into doing this poll? What did you have that sense that there was going to be Wisconsin public support for the climate initiatives that were in the act? Jared, let's start with you.
Well, we didn't know. I mean, we wanted to test out what worked in Wisconsin. You could not find a more quintessential swing state than Wisconsin. But Amen. Danielle and I are from Pennsylvania, which, you know, has some competition to Wisconsin in the swing state. But Wisconsin is swing state America, and we wanted to test. How does the IRA do in Wisconsin? What do people think about the climate bill? And also, what do people think about state-level climate action?
So let's get right to the numbers here. And Danielle, I'm going to ask them in a way that I guess kind of focuses on the Republican voters and in a good way. Mm-hmm. Overall, there is, 65% support for the Inflation Reduction Act after its components are read to them. Now, keep in mind that includes, 41% support by Republicans. But keep in mind that the respondents were also asked if they were concerned about climate change. And only 31% of Republicans said they were concerned about climate change compared to 95% of Democratic respondents. So, Danielle, what I'm getting at here is what struck me is the Republican support for the climate initiatives in there, even if they're not necessarily driven by climate change as the main reason for that support.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think it just shows that framing climate change as an economic issue, framing it as something that we can, you know, invest in good new clean energy jobs and make investments that are going to lower folks' utility bills in the long term, that's appealing across party lines. While the words climate change might be polarizing to some folks on different sides of the aisle, it's clear that the economic case for investing clean energy enjoys bipartisan support.
And then when we look at bipartisan support, you know, the one sector that we pay the most attention to are the people in polls who describe themselves as independents. These are always, you know, self-described folks, because you don't register to vote by party in Wisconsin. So, Jared, when it came to overall support, again, at 65% overall and 41% of Republicans, 91% among Democrats. But what's telling here is that 68% support level among independents. Again, you said you didn't know what you were going to find there, but to find two-thirds support of independents, you know, that's not a small number.
No, that's a huge number. And I think one of the things that you look for in politics, if you're running for office, is you know, one, you want to make sure that you can motivate your base, and two, you want to make sure that you're going to get swing voters. And this issue clearly shows climate change is an issue that motivates Democrats more than almost any other issue. And it's an issue where independents are in favor of clean energy investments. Clean energy is the most popular energy form, and people want to see investments like that.
It, also, when I talked about the independents, I mentioned there's 68% support for the package. And so in case folks are wondering, well, you know, how concerned are they? Again, that's 64% of independents have some level of concern about climate change. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court recently put some handcuffs basically on how the federal government through the Environmental Protection Agency could address air pollution. So Danielle, I know the act tries to address that in a way, but you asked respondents whether states should do more in light of that Supreme Court decision. What kinds of things did you learn from that?
Yeah, and what we saw was a majority of folks in Wisconsin want to see their state take more actions to address air pollution in the state. Again, really strong, especially among Democrats and independents. 84% of Democrats said they'd like to see the state do more, and 60% of independents. Republicans were a little different. Most of them thought that the state was already doing enough, but 30% also said that they think the state should be doing more. And when we talk about climate change, when we talk about clean air and clean water, those are very inextricably linked to climate change, and you know, it's something that impacts all of us. So to see such overwhelming agreement again that we should be you know, stepping up to address air pollution in the state was a really interesting finding.
I'm going to keep the focus on Republicans for a moment again, because this was so interesting to see in that question you just talked about, should states do more, and only 30% of Republicans said yes. And later, when asked about who would you support for governor, somebody that makes addressing climate change a priority or not, again, you had a solid number of Republicans saying they would rather choose the person who does not prioritize addressing climate change. And yet, when you ask the question about the $370 billion in the law for states to expand clean energy production, and you asked, should Governor Evers try to fight to get some of that funding? A clear majority of Republicans, Jared, said, yeah, they should fight to get the money. So once again, you know, principles are one thing, but if there's money out there for the economy, Republicans recognize it.
Totally. And look, there are always going to be a certain amount of Republicans who are, you know, your MAGA type of Republicans who every single time you say climate change, they're going to put on their blinders. But there are a lot of Republicans who are open to this, especially when you talk about clean energy. Clean energy is not as political as it once was. People are seeing the benefits in their community in Wisconsin and other states. And people want, you know, if there's federal money for clean energy, they want it in their state.
Danielle, I'm gonna paint with kind of a broad brush here, but since you do this for a living, you can tell me the degree to which I'm off the mark or not. When I read through this, it seemed like the polling about the Affordable Care Act over a decade ago, where people who voted or leaned Republican were against it. And then you would read the individual things, individual elements And they'd say, I'm for that. And then you'd say, well, that's all in the Affordable Care Act. Well, no, I'm against that. I'm against Obamacare. I don't know. Is that a trend that still gets noticed, especially when you have something like this with many different pieces that people have only heard about the bill and they haven't heard about the individual elements?
Yes, absolutely. I see this all the time. And that's why it's so important that the Biden administration goes out and sells the bill and talks about all of the great components of it and talks about how communities are already receiving the benefits from this investment. I mean, this week alone, we've seen quite a few major companies announcing major new factories for solar panels, for batteries in different states across the country. So if it's already starting just a few weeks after the bill was signed, I can only anticipate how much is going to be coming in the coming months, especially as, you know, governors fight for a share of these funds. So, you know, to see hopefully Governor Evers and the Biden administration showing Wisconsin voters, hey, look at what these federal dollars are doing to make your lives better. I think that'll really go a mile for helping to bridge that knowledge gap of maybe, you know, having an immediate knee-jerk reaction to feeling like, oh, climate change, I don't know how I feel about that, to, oh, wait, this is actually really a really good thing that they're coming and spending money and doing here in my state. So I'll see what the roadshow of selling this bill will look like.
Jared, you're co-founder of Evergreen, which your website says leads the fight to put bold climate action at the top of America's agenda, implement an all-out mobilization to defeat climate change and create millions of good union jobs in a just and thriving clean energy economy, which sounds great for anybody who's predisposed to think that way already. What do you get out of what Danielle and her colleagues are polling that helps you hone that message so that, I don't know how to put this bluntly, you don't come off as a raging tree hugger, but instead you're coming at this from somebody who recognizes that we're not just talking about the climate, despite all of its, you know, life and death perils. We're talking about ways to make this economically palatable. What do you learn from polling like this?
One of the biggest things that I learned is that people care the most right now about inflation and about, you know, cost of living. And one of the biggest drivers of inflation is fossil fuel energy prices. So one of the things that we can offer is, look, this climate bill, this is about making things cheaper for you. It's about getting cheaper energy. Wind and solar are among the cheapest forms of energy you can get right now. And there's going to be a massive influx if states step up and take action. So that's part of why we did this poll, to show that, look, states can lead on this and states can bring in clean energy projects at lower prices for people in their energy bills.
Danielle, I didn't give you a heads up, so I forgive me and let me know if you don't have this. But when asked whether people were in favor of Wisconsin producing more of its energy from cleaner sources like wind and solar power, 2/3 of respondents overall, 65%, say they were in favor of producing more energy from cleaner sources, including 44% of Republicans. Again, I don't know the historical number. That strikes me as something a little bit higher, that maybe that number of Republicans is coming up. Do you happen to know if Republican support for cleaner energy sources is ticking or trending upward, downward, flat, or do we not have that data here?
Well, I think to build on Jared's point, it really comes down to the economics of it. And I think that, you know, I do tons of polling in the states and nationwide, and I have seen this, you know, some moderate, you know, increase in Republican support for clean energy production, precisely because you can't beat the price. It's a good investment. We're seeing, you know, even my uncle was telling me how great it was when he installed solar panels on his house and then, you know, his energy bills went down. So again, it just all comes back to the bread and butter of how much money are you spending versus how much money are you saving? And the case is pretty unbeatable for wind and solar.
I have 2.5 hours left to go on this show, and we've already had the line of the day, even my uncle, because everybody has that uncle. That quintessential uncle who's the skeptic, but again, once it's, you know, 1 degree of separation, they see, oh, this is, there's something to this. So you got a good uncle there.
I totally agree. And look, I think like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people saw solar energy and they thought, oh, that's from a sci-fi movie. And now they see it on their neighbor's house and they see that their neighbor's saving money on their energy bill. And that is a huge difference in terms of seeing the benefits of clean energy in people's community.
It's all about that affirmation. And so one would hope that folks like Toxic Tom Tiffany, the congressman here up north, would take note of that, and rather than just coddling, you know, some of the big oil companies. Danielle Deseroth, of the lead climate strategist of Data for Progress, Jared Leopold, Evergreen Action co-founder, thank you so much for sharing the polling with us and letting us share it with our audience. We really appreciate the first look, and we hope you'll keep in touch with us on future trends.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
All right. We will take a break. And then when we come back, we will look at the ranked choice voting election results, the surprising results from Alaska. You're up north.
Wisconsin Conversation. Real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It's a Thursday that feels like a Friday. I'm thinking, Luke, maybe we should just play hooky tomorrow and just start the weekend early. It's got that feel to it. I'd be game. Of course, to do that, we haven't done enough shows to actually start doing reruns. So I don't know. We'll just, if you hear today's show tomorrow again, you'll know. We're just, you know, we're on a pontoon someplace.
Who says we haven't done enough shows?
There we go. I think we have enough material. Look, just stringing together every segment that starts and Grandpa has a story, I might be enough to do it right there. One thing I didn't
would never even know. The audience wouldn't even know if it was live or not. It was just another Grandpa story.
And it's Grandpa. Grandpa told the toilet story already. Oh, that Grandpa. He's always telling the same stories. One of the things I didn't get to bring up with Danielle and Jared, and it's okay because I'm sure it would just, you know, make them roll their eyes. But, you know, one of the things we try to do here at Up North News since long before the radio show, and that is to, you know, let people know the different ways that media outlets can cover an issue. And sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it's really not. And I turned to Dan Frumkin, who has been a media critic for quite some time, never hesitating to call out bad behavior, even if it's, you know, from the Washington Post, where he worked for many, many years. And he noted yesterday about the front page story. Well, this was Monday's front page story in the Washington Post. And he said, please note, this story is not about whether the climate bill will prevent a global catastrophe. The headline is only about a political argument that no one is making. And it's entirely based on interviews with a few people in Las Vegas. Here's the headline. Climate bill may not give a big lift. $4 billion investment unknown to some voters. And inside the story, Dan Frumkin highlights this line. In interviews with more than a dozen voters in the working class neighborhoods that encircle Las Vegas, most said they were focused on providing for their families amid soaring housing costs and gasoline prices. Few of them brought up climate change or were aware the Inflation Reduction Act provided drought relief. Well, no kidding. First off, you make it sound like you're talking to all these people in bustling Las Vegas until you look again closely. It's like about a dozen people in one city in Nevada, talking about whether they know the elements of a bill and whether it will help them or not. That is not what we have elections for. That is not what we elect people to do, is so that you can be informed on every line in every bill. The whole point of a representative democracy is you go represent us, you go make the best choices possible. And if I see material improvement in my life, then I'll know you're doing a good job. And that may include, that material improvement may just be news coverage about, you know, the next batch of jobs that come in to build batteries for electric vehicles or something like that.
And Pat, it's almost like there's a platform out there that maybe could inform the readers and listeners and viewers about the flood prevention or the climate aspects or the job aspects of these bills, rather than saying, well, I don't know if there's enough information out there, if this information is getting down there. They could cover that, the information itself, better. And the Washington Post is the exact platform that could address that.
Wait,
and share that information.
The Washington Post could be that platform.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're exactly right. They could be using it to talk about, yes, the jobs and the economic benefit, rather than, once again, the will this help Biden or hurt Biden? that's not the point. You know, when they say, well, you know, grocery prices are high. Yes, we know. And so the Inflation Reduction Act has these things. Again, people are looking for that easy button or something to pull. And Republicans are, you know, naturally going to harp on inflation because they think it's going to be a winning issue. But again, keep in mind, gas prices have come down for 11 weeks in a row and other indicators are looking up. So, you know, maybe instead of just harping on inflation that appears to be, you know, past its peak, maybe Republicans would want to tell us what they're for and what they would propose to us. It might help them perform better than what they have done lately, where as of last night, Democrats have won all five of the special elections held around the seat for seats in Congress. And so that takes us to what took place in Alaska yesterday, and actually for an election day that was quite some time ago. But it takes a while to count all the ballots in Alaska. It's a vast state. The ballots are mailed in by and large, and it takes a while for all those ballots to be mailed in and counted. Did you hear that, folks? In Alaska, they can mail in their ballots and take time to count them. Anyway, the final results.
I feel like that was just very pointed. Just very.
Might have been.
Just a little bit.
Because again, these same Republicans, again, not all Republicans. I'm talking about the ones who suddenly have had this conversion and see absentee ballots and other reforms or other conveniences as somehow fraudulent, when for years they were all about getting absentee ballots filled in and dropped off at drop boxes and things like that. So yeah, maybe a little edge to that. So the final results in the special election in Alaska last night may or may not make people change their minds on what they feel about something called ranked choice voting. But there is no denying that what happened last night creates the perfect textbook explainer of what ranked choice voting is, all because of our friend Sarah Palin. Because out of all the candidates that ran in the primary, the final came down to two Republicans and a Democrat all running for an open seat in Congress. And Sarah Palin, of course, was one of the Republicans. Now, in the voting, none of them got 50%. And that's the whole point of ranked choice voting, is to get rid of this scenario where in a multi-candidate field, somebody is elected with, like, you know, 18% of the vote. Instead, ask people to rank all of the candidates. How do you feel about all of them? Tell us your first choice. Tell us your second choice. Tell us your third choice. By the way, you don't have to have a second choice or a third choice, but if you want to, you can. So the candidate who came in third was one of the two Republicans. So he's eliminated. So you take all of those ballots that listed him as their first choice and you run them again based on who all of his voters said was their second choice. Well, surely, since he's a Republican, all of those Republican voters listed Sarah Palin as their second choice, right? No, it's Sarah Palin. Of course not. Now, many Republicans did list Sarah Palin, but not enough. They either listed nobody rather than put down the Democrat's name, or they listed the Democrat, Mary Peltola, second. And so then she gets those votes, and she had already been leading. But by the time all of those second choice votes were cast, that propelled her above the 50% margin. So she ended up with 51.5% to Sarah Palin's 48.5%. You had a true competition based on asking the voters, what do you think of the whole field, rather than letting, you know, the voters in one party tell you who one of the candidates is going to be on the ballot? And I say it's a textbook explainer because when you say to people, they'd be like, well, yeah, why wouldn't the Republican voters always list the Republican second? Oh, no. Depending on who it is, they may not necessarily vote for that person at all. So I asked on Facebook last night, and I'm asking here as well, what you think of it after hearing this example of what happened in Alaska. Does that make you a proponent of ranked choice voting? Do you hear that and go, no, that's not right? Or, you know, is it still too soon to tell? Where are you, Mr. Mathers?
I mean, I think it was, like you said, it's a textbook example. And I think it's important to point out the fact that Pertola was still leading. So had you just done first or there a plurality vote, most votes gets it. She would have still won. And so there's no malfeasance here, because there's going to be some people that are like, oh, you already saw U.S. Senator Tom Cotton was saying that ranked choice voting was
just getting that
votes.
Where he's going to, it's a scam. Yeah. It's a scam.
And it's undermining democracy. And it's like, no.
Would he have said that if Palin had won?
No.
Oh, hell no.
Absolutely not. And there wouldn't be a problem with absentee ballots in Wisconsin if Trump won the state in 2020. The only reason that they have Republican voters get so worked up and so upset about the way that elections are conducted is only happens when they lose. They have to blame the system or the refs or something. They can't just accept that they lost. And so I think ranked choice voting is great. My biggest question would really come into it is, does it eliminate primaries? Because if you have primaries, that's typically how you get down to the two candidates that go up against. And I understand in a general election, there's still libertarian candidates, there's independents, there's Constitution Party candidates. And so there are other candidates still that way. But I almost feel like ranked choice voting would eliminate the factor of primaries, because you could just have everybody run and then you have all voters choose among the contestants running, the candidates running.
Well, what they did in Alaska was there were more than 30 candidates who filed to run. And so what they set up was a primary. And, it, you know, originally it's called a jungle primary because it's wild. It's anything goes. And then the rule said the general will come down to the top four.
Okay.
Now, I mentioned three in Alaska because the candidate that came in fourth dropped out of the race for reasons I guess we still don't know. So it actually was supposed to be four candidates. And so had that been the case, last night's round may not have been over. It could have been that they had to do it again with the three candidates that remain. So I would say that you would want to set it up that way, because like you would say, well, there could still be a libertarian on the ballot or whatever. No, you put them all in now, and now people no longer think they're throwing their vote away if they vote for one of these third parties.
Right.
They may vote for that one person from the Constitution Party, you know, who appeals to them without actually joining, you know, the Constitution Party or the Green Party or whatever the case may be. So I'm very intrigued by it. I think, again, you can write the rules different ways, how many people qualify for the last round and things like that. But I don't see why we wouldn't explore that further here. One of the things I certainly heard knocking on doors, you know, throughout my time in politics was that people, even those who are staunch Democrats or staunch Republicans, are not happy with the two-party system as it's set up now to control elections. There are too many elections right now that actually won't be elections in November. A district is so red or so blue that whoever won the primary last month is going to be the winner, because there is no opponent, you know, in November. And so for all of the Democrats in that Republican district and the Republicans in that Democratic district, is that fair to them? And certainly I think in a lot of those places, they would like to try this. And you can try anything in a democracy. That's what you're supposed to do, is you can try different things to try to make things work for you. So maybe it's something that you do try just for, you know, an election cycle, or just for the April local elections, the nonpartisan ones, things like that. I think it's worth doing rather than listening to somebody like Tom Cotton, who is perhaps the most loathsome member of the U.S. Senate. And that's saying something when you got Ted Cruz and, you know, a whole bunch of other folks in there.
That's hard to choose from.
It is. There's a lot of, you know, what some people like to call punchable faces, you know, there. But I do not advocate for violence. I'm just doing what Lindsey Graham did. I'm not advocating for violence, even though I just said somebody has a punchable face. Cotton notes that 60% of Alaska's voters voted for a Republican the first time around. And so he thinks that, you know, this is now a convoluted process. It disenfranchises voters and a Democrat won. No. Nobody was disenfranchised. And all of those 60% of voters who voted for a Republican as their first choice could have voted for a Republican as their second choice. But that Republican was Sarah Palin. And so we thank her very much for providing a textbook example of how ranked choice voting can work and get the true sentiment of the voters. We will wrap up this hour's conversation after this. You're up north. Who's ready for a road trip? We're coming up on Labor Day weekend. We're going to talk about road trips and getaways in just a moment. But first, Luke, I have to share. I'm going to hold my phone up to the microphone, so I don't know if this will work or not. But from my younger daughter, there's a three-year-old grandson and a five-month-old granddaughter. And I just got this clip of him singing the ABCs to her and her laughing at her big brother singing it. I don't know if this will work or not, but I'm going to give it a go anyway here. Hold on. We should all be so lucky to get somebody reacting like that to our singing. It didn't happen with me the one or two times I tried karaoke, but to get us back to road trips after my now that my melted heart is coming back into play here. We put up on Up North News a few different features that we wanted to share before summer runs out. And so I just wanted to spend a little time promoting those. Now, again, this is truly last minute, but we did ask, what if you were planning a Labor Day staycation, as is going to be done at the Kreitlow Bed and Breakfast, and maybe you've changed your mind? You know, the weather's looking really good for Saturday, Sunday, Monday, sunny, mid-70s. And so we know, you know, there are definitely places to go when you're only talking like a 7-hour drive, you know, from corner to corner. It means you're only hours or even minutes away from several different destinations. So one of our contributing writers picked four to tell people about, and I won't spend a lot of time with Bayfield and the Apostle Islands simply because we talked about it yesterday with Kristen Lyerly, and you know, the National Lakeshore is just gorgeous. I do have to say the picture that we used is of one of the dozen or so lighthouses on the Apostle Islands, and the one we used is on one of the islands called Long Island. And first constructed in 1897, you can't, it's not a public area, but I was able to get there. It's actually my photo from a trip I took along with Senator Tammy Baldwin, boy, almost 10 years ago now. But I have some beautiful photos from up there. And you know how sometimes, I mean, we all take pictures and every one in a million is like, wow, this turned out really good. And it's like, I looked at all the other photos that were available for us and, you know, Shutterstock and everything else. And I'm like, no, we'll go with this. This is good. But again, it's tough to make the Apostle Islands look bad. It's gorgeous. We go down way down to the south, to, you know, Luke's neck of the woods or neck of the city, as the case may be, to talk about Taste of Madison. So Taste of Madison is a Labor Day weekend thing. So you've been or you're going to go?
I have been, but I typically go up to Door County every Labor Day weekend. That's what my mom's side of the family has always done. Since I was like a little kid, I think I missed a few because of working in college. This is kind of the move-in weekend. Mm-hmm. Like that's been going on all week. And then you got classes resuming again come Tuesday. So I always worked and staffed the dining hall, ran the dining halls for a little while here at UW-Madison. And so I had to work over the weekend. Couldn't go up to Door County. But then the nice byproduct of that was I did have some time to go up and do Taste of Madison around the square.
I would really like that. I've done it one time, and you know, you can't argue with any of these places. You know, some places do like, you know, Rib Fest or, you know, other food themed events where you get dozens of exhibitors to come and cook together. And I think this year it's more than 70 food vendors will be around the Capitol Square. There is no admission fee. The festival donates any profits to local charities and nonprofits. So yeah, I think that would be worth your while. If you're looking for a road trip that wants to, include food, you could do worse than that.
Oh, it's very good.
Yeah. The next one noted in this article is the St. Croix River Valley, which I think probably doesn't get enough due. We talk about, Door County all the time, talk about the Apostle Islands all the time. The St. Croix River Valley is gorgeous, and it too has dells, just like Wisconsin dells, that are just these gorges, that the river carves through. I think a lot of people, when they think of the St. Croix River, they think of what they cross at Hudson, which, is fairly flat at that point and is getting set to empty into the Mississippi down by Prescott. But yeah, the upper St. Croix, the river valley there is great. There's a couple of old-fashioned paddleboat steamboats that are there that you can take a ride on. And, again, on both sides of the river, Taylor's Falls, Minnesota, down to Stillwater, but of course up in St. Croix Falls, all kinds of shops. And then there's Interstate Park, which is home to the far western portion of the Ice Age Trail. And while the Ice Age Trail is not specifically listed here, I would note here that is one of my, that's on my bucket list or my to-do list, my Wisconsin to-do list. We are not hikers, I would say, but it's something that we think would make for, some good day hikes. And I mean, I don't think you can ever get to all of it because it's 1,000 miles as it winds its way through Wisconsin, basically marking the glacial limits of the most recent ice age 10,000 years ago. So you can see how the mammoth ice sheets, sculpted the landscape or didn't, as you get, down toward the Driftless area. Southern parts of the state and haven't had a chance to really appreciate, what the glaciers did all those years ago. And I'm sorry, Luke, go ahead.
It's a great hike. Great hiking. Yeah. I haven't done the whole 1,000, but I've done bits and pieces here and there, and it is a great time.
The last one noted in this article at upnorthnewswi.com is the Manitowoc Two Rivers area. And again, I didn't write the article. I'm a little biased since I married a farm girl from that area. But, again, if you haven't been to the Great Lakes, if you haven't seen, because we're very fortunate. We have Lake Superior up to the north, and we have Lake Michigan out to the east. And there was a recent designation in the Manitowoc Two Rivers area, the Shipwreck Coast Marine Sanctuary. And that's an area that protects 36 different shipwrecks across more than 960 square miles alongside three counties. And even if you're not, a scuba diver, you can still explore the wrecks while you're swimming on the beaches at Two Rivers Point Beach State Park. And you can learn more about the wrecks at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. And you can find plenty of other things to do in Manitowoc as well. In fact, we did an earlier story about quirky Wisconsin destinations. And in downtown Manitowoc, you can see the spot where a 20-pound chunk of satellite, Sputnik 4, that the Russians put up, crashed onto a Manitowoc street in 1962. So there is no shortage of things to do around the area, around Wisconsin. We tag all of those stories, our Wisconsin, at upnorthnewswi.com. So I hope you will check those out for a road trip. If not this weekend, maybe you're planning something for fall colors in September, October. Political analyst Joe Zepecki joins us in the next hour. We'll be back. You're up north.